quite interesting. Numbers 11 is a classic chapter about two main issues in life. Leadership, and the other one is complaining. I saw it in some of your lips. And it's a shocker how seriously God views complaining. It actually hurts when I go through this chapter, just because it weighs on me. But then again, the flip side is, next week is Thanksgiving. I thought, wow, this is great. Who could have timed that better? So I thought, what hymn should we sing tonight? How about Come, Ye Thankful People, Come? Number 559, Come, Ye Thankful People, Come. Good. Neat song. Wraps a lot of good biblical theology in four verses, doesn't it? God's eternal judgment, God's eternal reward, God's temporal short-term blessing and short-term judgment. And very interesting, beautiful, beautiful song for us. Well, turn with me, please, to Numbers chapter 11. We're going to scout out some details in Numbers 11. Entitled this, Share the Leadership Load and Give Thanks. That's the positive side to what we see in Numbers chapter 11. A lot of Numbers chapter 11 focuses on what the people did that grieved God. And so this is a pretty challenging chapter. Or I've entitled it tongue-in-cheek, Complaining Can Be a Grave Offense. Ooh, yes. Complaining can be a grave offense. Numbers, the book of Numbers, alternates sections, as you've already begun to see, of lawgiving and organization with travel log. And here we're going to see the move from Mount Sinai to the Mount Sinai in Egypt, down here, up to the southern edge of Canaan, or Kadesh Barnea. And at this point, obedient Israel's heart is going to be seen as fallible. They are not perfect. They are not complete. They are not finished in their maturing. They're going to become complainers and whiners. And even later in the book, we'll see Moses and Aaron rebel in chapter 20. But here, as they travel, God is going to plague them, just as he plagued Israel throughout the book at different times, to get their attention. I'm sorry, just as he had plagued Pharaoh and the Egyptians. Yet, though God judged that generation of Israelites, does that mean God is finished with his promise to Abraham? No. God will still keep his promise to Abraham. And later on in chapters 22 and 23, and 24, we see him use a false prophet named Balaam to reassure that. This is a very interesting book. So God is still going to keep his promise that they would be an amazingly enormous and powerful people. And yet he's going to judge them along the way to keep them loyal to him. Chapter 11, verses 1 through 3, we're going to see that a fiery fury consumes the complainers. Let's begin. I'll begin in verse 1. And the people complained in the hearing of the Lord about their misfortunes. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of them, outlying parts of the camp. Then the people cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire died down. So the name of that place was called Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. Now when the people complained, what was that? There were some problems with that. Tell me about the problems with complaining here. They weren't trusting the Lord to give him what's good and what's best. Okay? Okay, they were focused on what they on their own needs, what they felt they needed and wanted, instead of saying, well, God must know what we really need. And they started whining. Okay? Their complaints, what would their complaints say about Moses and God? We already talked about what it says about God. What's it say about Moses?
They didn't trust his leadership.
They didn't trust Moses' leadership either. That is gut-wrenching when it happens. And it's been a great first year. But I will say, if you've been in any leadership, any role, anywhere, you know what it's like when the attitude turns. It's not fun. And people start complaining and whining. Why isn't it like this? How come you didn't do that? Why did you forget that? How come you didn't do this? And you just think, what in the world am I supposed to do? They don't all agree. How in the world can I satisfy them? You can't. Satisfy God and trust Him to work everybody else out. But Moses had to learn that too. He had to learn that experientially. Just as anyone in any leadership role has to learn that. God heard, the little verb anan, He heard their complaints. Not as if He couldn't hear everything and know everything, but He was aware of it, is the point. He knew what they were talking about, and He's going to act. When it says God hears something, He's going to take action in response. So God hears them complaining. His anger was kindled. Literally, the nostrils of His, it says His nostrils flared, or His nostrils became hot, is the Hebrew idiom. His nostrils were hot, as if He were angry. That's an anthropomorphism, I would say. I don't believe that God the Father has a 3D body because of the anthropomorphisms used in Scripture. But it says this is God was angry with them. And it says he consumed some of the people on the outlying parts of the camp. Why on the outliers? I don't know. Maybe because they were far away from leadership who could quiet them down. And they just said, let's go outside to the edge and we'll mumble and grumble on the outside, you know. Not the mainstream people. I don't know. But it was the outlying edges. And in God's grace, that's all He did. He didn't consume the whole camp. So they called that place Taberah, when the people cried out for mercy. And this becomes a pattern you see all throughout Numbers. The people cry out, Moses cries to the Lord, and then God answers. Interesting progression. It actually is a good progression that they cry out and Moses goes to the Lord. That's the way it ought to be. But it'd be good if they went to the Lord themselves, but instead they're complaining and Moses has to respond. So here they after they cried out and God answered and stopped, the fire died down. Verse 2, the name was called Taberah, which means burning. Now if you saw the fires happen, and you happened to have been around and known what happens to Nadab and Abihu, you would begin to connect some dots, wouldn't you? Wait a minute, two guys died. There's fire out there. We just might... let's get our attitudes right. And some did. Most of them did. They got it turned around quickly. But they were, what was the problem? The problem is in verses 4 through 9 that they were moaning over manna. They were moaning over the monotony of manna. Some of you, well, I'm sorry. Okay, let's just say, I'm of a generation that knows a guy named Keith Green, and I sort of liked his music when I was 14 to 20, and I still like it because it's in my head. But Keith Green writes a song about traveling through the wilderness. And one of his songs is, he says, manna burgers, manna dogs, you know, manna quiche. And it goes over and over, and you're just thinking, wow, that would be sort of yucky to have those foods packaged out of manna. It's sort of like when they said, soy burgers, it's the answer to everything. And you think, well, soy's okay, but it's not the answer to everything. Well, the Israelites were having an attitude issue, and they were saying, the manna, surely that's not all we get to eat. Verses 4 through 9. Now the rabble that was among them had a strong craving. Same word used when Eve craved something they weren't supposed to have. And the people of Israel also wept again. They said, oh, that we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt that costs practically nothing. The cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Now, they weren't Italian, but they did like the onions and the garlic. You know, that's the way it was. They were missing their vegetables. After all, what grows in the wilderness? Who knows whether they figured out barrel cacti yet? I don't know what they were eating besides the manna. But it is sort of short on vegetables, isn't it? And even if you happen to grow some in mountain shadows, the deer are very thankful for those vegetables. On the other hand, look at all the money I've saved on not cutting my lawn. I haven't had to cut it with the deer nibbling all the fresh food, fresh shoots up. That's okay with me. But they were looking for that. They were missing it. Now our strength is dried up and there's nothing at all but this manna to look at. Verse 7. Now the manna was like coriander seed and its appearance like that of bdellium. The people went about and gathered it and ground it in handmills or beat it in mortars and boiled it in pots and made cakes of it. And the taste of it was like the taste of cakes baked with oil. Some of your translations say with olive oil. Tastes like olive oil. When the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell with it. I stuck on the back of your sheet a black and white picture of bdellium. Bdellium is a resinous substance. It's sort of a resinous amber-colored substance found in desert areas. It's an aromatic gum like myrrh exuded from the tree. This wasn't what manna was, but manna was about that color. A pale rosin, like that of a pale rosin. Now who was it that was complaining? In some of your translations it says a mixed multitude, and some of the others said riffraff, and what's that? Rabble. The ESV comes up with rabble. I think Titus calls this divisive people. People who just want to make their own point. Now some would say, well, that was the Israelite or the non-Israelites who left Egypt, but that doesn't seem quite fair or required by the language. Yes, Susie?
That's what the Geneva says,
so it is possible, right? It is possible these were not the Israelites. And they would have remembered, and we're sacrificing. We didn't have to leave Egypt, but God chose to leave that non-specific enough that it could simply be anybody who's complaining. Anybody at all. I think it's interesting. You don't hear complaints against Egyptians as they travel. And God could have written the text that way, but he didn't. So hold those both as real possibilities. But these who were divisive and whining were complaining, man, the fish, they practically leaped out of the Nile River. You know, you can imagine, right? What supplies the desert? Occasional rains. What supplied Egypt? Huge, reliable Nile. That's where I would want to live if I were thinking like on a human level, where things are reliable. I'm not much of one for climbing mountains and putting my tent up there and hoping lightning doesn't hit it and seeing if I can conquer the mountain by staying alive, you know, through a snowstorm. I'd rather be in Egypt. And they were beginning to think that way. Ugh, this is tiresome. Can we change the menu? No, that wasn't the point. That wasn't God's plan for them. So they were moaning over the manna. Verses 10 through 15, Moses is going to lament his lead role. Guys, every one of you've been in lead roles, and hopefully you haven't lamented often. But you know what it's like when a lament comes on. Watch what happens in verses 10 through 15. Moses heard the people weeping throughout their clans, everyone at the door of his tent. And the anger of the Lord blazed hotly, and Moses was displeased. That word is ra, the same word for evil. Or calamity. It's a strong word. It's more than just, well, I don't like that. It's, oh, it grieves him. Moses said to the Lord, why have you dealt ill with your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight? That word favor is important. That's the word that Noah later gets from the Lord, Canaan. Why have I not found favor in your sight that you lay the burden of all this people on me? This is one of the funniest verses in the whole Bible. Verse 12. Did I conceive all this people? Did I give them birth? That you should say to me, carry them in your bosom, as a nurse carries a nursing child to the land that you swore to give to their fathers. Oh, Moses. Isn't it funny? You know, and if you're a pastor or a deacon or a Sunday school teacher, sometimes you're tempted to say, Lord, did I birth all these people? Why don't they grow up? You brought them into the kingdom. Help them grow up. And the Lord says, Jim, I gave you a Sunday school class to help grow up. I'm just picking Jim because he's a good example, not a negative example. Or, you know, he says, you know, I put you there for that purpose. Now lead on. Call on me. And so what does the Lord say? Moses continues by saying, where am I to get meat to give all this people? Hey, the disciples said something like that about 1,400 years later, didn't they? Bread. Huh. For they weep before me and say, give us meat that we may eat. Good translation. I like that one. I am not able to carry all this people alone. 3.5 million plus? No. The burden is too heavy for me. If you will treat me like this, kill me at once. If I find favor in your sight. That's funny. That I may not see my wretchedness. Oh, Moses. Wake up, Moses. This is not a bad dream, but you need to snap out of it. Moses is saying, why did you pick me to lead 3.5 million whiny people? I mean, praise the Lord, all 6 of my family members don't whine at once. You know, it's usually maybe 1 or 2, but not all of them. Several million? That's hard to stand up against, isn't it? I mean, you would be tempted to say, Lord, can't you just kill me and get the pain over with? How many times did those of you who went to college think that, you know, Lord, can't I just die before I have to write my term paper? Can't I just die before I have to take my final? I'm so tired of not sleeping and all those things. Moses says, I'd rather die than be responsible for this all by myself. Well, God says, I have a solution for you, Moses. It's quite funny. But the solution is in verses 16 through 30, where God gathers 70 elders and food aplenty. Now, interestingly, the word gather comes from the root Asaph. Yeah, like the one who wrote the Psalms, because he gathered the people together to hear the singing. But this word for gathered is used in 4 times in this chapter. You see God gathering the elders. You see God gathering... help me. He gathers the food as these quail will come in. God also gather the people to me. And then there's a 4th gathering before we come to the end of the book, or end of the chapter. Very interesting. Yeah, so he's gathering them in verses 11 through, or 16 through 30. God gathers the 70 elders and food aplenty. Let's pick it up in verse 16. Then the Lord said to Moses, gather for me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be the elders of the people and officers over them. Bring them to the tent of meeting and let them take their stand there with you. And I will come down and talk with you there. And I will take some of the Spirit is on you and put it on them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you may not bear it yourself alone. And say to the people, consecrate yourselves for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat. For you have wept in the hearing of the Lord, saying, who will give us meat to eat? For it was better for us in Egypt. Therefore, the Lord will give you meat to eat. And you shall eat. You shall not eat just for 1 day, or 2 days, or 5 days, or 10 days, or 20 days. Here's humor. God has a sense of humor if you want to, looking for places. But a whole month until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you. Ouch. Because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and you have wept before him saying, why did we come out of Egypt? But Moses said, the people among whom I number 600,000 on foot. Wait a minute. This is not the Lord speaking anymore. Moses is saying, God, I don't really think you can do what you just said. Uh-oh. 600,000 on foot. Now he's rounding, We know that. And you have said, I will give them meat, and that they may eat a whole month. Shall flocks and herds be slaughtered for them and be enough for them? I mean, they brought some herds and flocks out, but is that going to be enough to feed all of them at once? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them and be enough for them? Moses. And the Lord said to him, Moses, is the Lord's hand shortened? Now you will see whether my word will come true for you or not. Wow. Interestingly, who are these 70? We don't know exactly. We think they may have been 70 picked from among the elders who were chosen earlier in Exodus chapter 18. It says he calls them shofarim or scribes, as if they had some experience in writing things down or at least being administrators. What does God say he's going to do so that these men can lead well? Something pretty impressive. In verse 17. God says he's going to put his spirit, he's going to take some of his spirit, not as if Moses is going to be short, but put the same spirit on these 70 men. So that people will know these indeed are identified by the same Spirit of God. Now, was this a good way to get leaders? I implied the answer, huh? This is probably not God's preferred plan for giving Moses capable men. I believe God wanted to give those to Moses anyway. Moses just went about it the wrong way. That's hard work sometimes, isn't it? To train people to be faithful so that they do serve and to not complain that they're not ready yet. It's important.
So do you think it was God's plan to give Israel quail and Moses the elders? He just wanted them to ask, you know, in a manner a little different.
I would question the manna, but question the quail. I would question whether God wanted to give them quail. Would have given them quail, but he would have fed them. You know, if they'd been content, maybe he would have fed them a variety of things. We just won't know. But I do believe it was good, it was fitting that God said, you need to pick 70 to field these complaints so you're not going to have a grumbling, whining deal. Susie. Okay, that's a good point. I mean, we know that they do travel across the Sinai in the spring, and they return back in the fall. Now, was Moses doing a special trick? How well did the Israelites know about this stuff? They probably knew nothing. Yeah, once they had eaten quail a year before near Mount Sinai, but they didn't know what was going to happen. So this was a supernatural timing of all the events, even if he's using a natural phenomenon, supernatural timing, a supernatural placement, because these things do fly low, but they were just staying there. They were just staying there. So it was very interesting. And that's exactly right. They do fly across there. So these guys, they're 70 elders, and they end up prophesying. Well, we didn't get that far yet. So Moses says, how am I going to get all this meat? Verses 24 and 25. So Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord. And he gathered 70 men of the elders of the people and placed them around the tent, tabernacle. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him and took some of the spirit that was on him and put it on the 70 elders. And as soon as the spirit rested on them, they prophesied, but they did not continue doing it. So it appears this may have been a one-time occurrence of prophesying. Now someone said, well, does that mean simply that they spoke in languages they didn't know? It didn't say that. What does it mean? All we know is they spoke and God empowered them to speak. Now that does sort of prefigure or foreshadow what's going to happen in Acts 2. When God's going to take his spirit and he's going to put it on his people and they're going to prophesy and speak in tongues and do things that show he is the one speaking through these apostles. Verse 26 and says, interesting note. Now two men remained in the camp, one named Eldad, the other named Medad, and the Spirit rested on them. They were among those registered, but they had not gone out to the tent, so they prophesied in the camp. Were these from the 70? It's hard to know for sure. These were prophesying around the camp instead of inside the tent. So good possibility they were not part of the 70. And so it's very interesting. It says they were not among those listed in the registration. They were among those registered or listed in the registration, but they had not gone out to the tent, so they prophesied in the camp. Interesting, the word for registered or listed is actually ketuvim, and for Pastor Tim and I, that's a pretty important word. Written, ketuvim, because there are things in the Hebrew text that are written, and then there's a pronounced way of reading text sometimes, depending on which way you handle the vowels in the Hebrew word. It sounds maybe sort of like British English versus American English when you swap your vowels around. But anyway, there was a change there. The word ketuvim, they were not among those written. They were among those who were written. So Eldad and Medad were there. Now Joshua is being prompted. Joshua is prompted to do something here. And it's really interesting what happens. Because a young man told Moses, these guys are prophesying inside the camp. So what does Joshua do? Verse 28. Joshua, the son of Nun, the assistant of Moses from his youth, literally a choice man, handpicked man is the idea, said, "My Lord Moses, stop them." But Moses said to him, "Are you jealous for my sake? I would that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord would put his spirit on them." And Moses and the elders of Israel returned to the camp. Is Joshua doing something right or something wrong here? Help me out. Just, what are some guesses? Okay, sure. Joshua is saying, wait, these guys aren't authorized. Stop them from speaking. So he's trying to guard Moses' lead over the people. I mean, that was part of what good second guys and third guys do. And Moses and Joshua is trying to do that. And yet, how beautifully Moses responds, "I wish everybody were speaking for the Lord. I'm not worried about me. It's not the issue. It's not a problem." The word, he says, you know, "I wish they were all zealous." The same word is jealous. "Are you jealous for my sake?" It has a positive meaning, zealous, or zeal, and a negative meaning, jealous. "I wish everybody was prophesying, and the Lord would put his spirit on them." Well, that would solve a lot of problems, wouldn't it? Let me ask you a question. Was Moses' desire ever fulfilled? Differently? Fast forward. Ezekiel 36, Jeremiah 31, there's a promise, right? "I will put my spirit in you, O Israel." Not just on the prophets and the kings and the priests, special ones, but on everyone that loves the Lord. And we come to the New Testament, and the Spirit is in every one of us who know Christ. Moses said something way more powerful than I ever realized. "I wish God's Spirit were in everyone." And now it is true of New Testament Christians. So this anticipates the new covenant, even Joel 2:28, when the Spirit is placed in all of God's people. Mark?
Wasn't it God's plan to do that in the first place?
Sure.
Versus in this situation, basically, they evidently wanted to do God's will.
Sure, they did want to do God's will. And, you know, God could have formed the church first, but God has chosen to reveal himself progressively, step by step, through time, explaining, as it were, or teaching through history who he is and how he's going to act in response to mankind. And so he has built for us to read the New Testament understanding. The Old Testament is a wealth of foundation. And we would not understand it very quickly without understanding the Old Testament well. So, yeah, God was God's plan all along, but he chose to work one guy, 12 nations, or 12 tribes. Okay, narrow it down somewhere. It's really interesting how God does that. But yeah. And now he's broadened it to include the church. But let's go back to Numbers chapter 11. Or I took us astray, but we'll go back to Numbers 11. Because Moses and the elders of Israel returned to the camp. No quarrel, no fight. Well, verses 31 through 35, we're going to see that God kills the cravers with their mouths full. No longer is there a complaint in their mouth. Quail. Ooh. Then a wind from the Lord sprang up, and it brought quail from the sea. Yes, Moses, not fish. Quail. And let them fall beside the camp about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on the other side around the camp at about 2 cubits above the ground, which would be 36 inches roughly. And the people rose all that day and all night and all the next day and gathered the quail. Those who gathered least gathered 10 homers. All right. I can't even knock it. Ah, we're not talking about baseball. But this was a home run, wasn't it? 10 homers. You know how much 10 homers is? 10 homers is about 2,000 liters. And if you're not a liter person, we'll convert it to bushels. 60 bushels or 480 dry gallons of quail. A person. That's a lot of quail. It's hard to drag it around. I bet it smelled different than before. It was amazing. All this food. Yeah, look at what we've got here. Uh-oh, what's going to happen here? These are little small partridges that migrate, just as Susie was pointing out. And so here they are. Supernatural timing, supernatural placement. But what happens? In verse 31, this wind springs up. Verse 32, they gathered and they spread them out all around the camp. Verse 33, while the meat was yet between their teeth, before it was consumed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord struck down the people with a very great plague. Therefore, the name of that place was called Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people who had the craving. From Kibroth Hattaavah, the people journeyed to Hazeroth, and from there they remained at Hazeroth. Wow. Interesting. In chapter 10, the Spirit of the Lord, the Ruach of the Lord, empowers men to serve. But in chapter 11, the same word, ruach, is used for spirit and also for wind. Same word. And now the wind of the Lord judges people that are hard-hearted toward him. That's always good to have warnings. It's not good to live with only warnings in your life, right? I mean, you can tell the difference, right? Someone who grew up with only negative reinforcement. Why didn't you do that? Why didn't you do that? You did that wrong. You did that wrong. And the person never thinks they can do anything right. Everyone else might think they're stellar. Or the person may crumble and do nothing right. We need encouragement too. And God does both. This is a stern warning. And his ruach, nuach, rests upon the people here. His spirit rests on them. Yes, ruach is breath or wind or spirit. Yes. God could have arranged that wind, just keep them in there. We can't get out of this wind tunnel.
Yeah.
God set it up that way. I don't know exactly how. But Susie may be able to come up with a good geographical explanation for it. And that would be pretty neat. Yeah. So God just arranged it. The wind of God, the breath of God, brought the food there. 480 dry gallons a person they could collect each. Obviously, whom did the Lord kill? Not everyone. Some. Representative. Because there are others to journey on in verse 35. But it appears perhaps those who are the greediest and those who just rushed in, oh, let's get everything we can get, and weren't satisfied with some, perhaps those are the ones the Lord judged. We don't know the details. But he did, and they quit, and they buried them there. And Kibroth Hattava means the graves of the ones who craved. God chose to use names to remind people of what happened. Tavera, the burning. Kibroth Hattava, two names for the place. The place of the burning and the place where the burial of those who craved, the graves of those who craved. So that's chapter 11. Complaining can be a grave offense. Praise God that some among us rarely complain and tug at us when we start to. You know, let's egg one another on to not complain and keep giving thanks and do what's right and give thanks and trust God to provide for us. Well, there's some interesting other passages I'd like to hop through, as I often do. Some other passages that just comment on leadership and on complaining. Let me ask you first, what are some things that it's common for people to complain about? Sometimes it even includes us. What do people complain about? And I'm not going to hold you guilty if you speak it. Just, you're helping us identify areas. Okay. We don't like the fact they made the decision without us. Well, how come they always have to ask us? There's two sides to that thing, aren't there? Okay, they can both happen. Gordon? Oh, I saw someone's hand over here. I don't know where it was. Mark? How come it's not here yet? Isn't it time already? All right. What else? Doug.
One of the things that often happens in church, people say, well, we never did it that way before. But the implication is, well, you know, however we did it in the past, we should keep doing it and never do it any different.
Yeah. If it was good before, it must be the best way, or we would have changed already. Well, wait, no, you wouldn't. You would have stuck with it. Okay. One of the things I've noticed is that today can never be the same as yesterday for lots of reasons. I got out of bed yesterday and I went back, you know, at the end of the day to sleep. Today is a new day. You know, I live and breathe. You know, my muscles get sore or weaker or stronger. They're not the same as the last year. I don't want my children to be the same as they were a year ago. I want them to grow. I want them to mature. Technology changes. People write new songs. You know, is it a sin to sing a song that someone wrote that never wrote a song when we were kids? Okay, Rose is the dissenting opinion. Just I want you to know, Rose said it might not be right. No. Maybe I should take that off the tape, as my friend says. I'll take that off the tape. Yeah, sometimes we feel that way. Well, just I never heard that song before. It can't be a good one. Josiah loves me enough. He's patient. Dad, I got you a CD. Oh, okay, I'll listen to it now. You know, or listen to this song. Have you thought about the words on this? No, I just didn't like the intro. Oh, well, listen to it, okay. What else do we complain about? Dick. Jim.
What do you think the difference
That's a great question. Is there any difference between those people who complain that God judged and Moses complaining whom God provided solution for? And at first I want to say they both complain. They both sinned by complaining. But one of the key differences is what Moses did. He went to God. It doesn't say that the people did. It's just they cried out against the Lord. But, you know, they cried out. It doesn't appear that they were willing to listen.
It's like you're saying, well, they are saying, but it doesn't like you. But they're saying that God is inadequate compared to what they had in Egypt. They've totally forgotten what, how they complained when they were in Egypt. In verse 5, remember the fish would be to eat in Egypt for nothing. It's free. Well, so was the quail. The cucumbers and the peppers and the root and the rubber. I mean, it's like
that is what they're saying. Oh yeah, they complained about being slaves in Egypt, but now they're saying, you know, Lord, I think we're going to reject your deliverance from slavery. We'd just rather be slaves instead of your servants. I know we're not eating so good anymore. Not exactly. He didn't say that, no. He is overwhelmed. And he is having a very hard time believing God's going to be able to provide enough food. Yeah, that is just a bad, bad place to be, isn't it?
I think of the kids who text KMN,
kill me now. Okay. Yeah, there's some weird stuff on social media now. I have to give an illustration of one of my wife's relatives. Several years ago, developed cancer. And he may have been a casual church grower, but I don't know that there's any more than that. He welcomed us when we visited his home, when we were raising support. Great guy. Everybody loved him. He was just fun. Everybody loved him. He got cancer. And one of the things he said in an email, people said, have you asked why me? He said, I say, why not me? I've had such a great life. I got to go fishing, hunting. I got boys who are married. I got grandkids. I had a wonderful military career. It's been great. Why not me? Would I pick somebody else? Wow. But Moses is wrestling with that. He's saying, all these people, why did you kill me before something else does? But that was the wrong. He should have just said, God, what do you want me to do? Let's do it. So the fundamental issue of complaining isn't that different. Perhaps Moses listening to the Lord is what's different. Because it says they complained in the hearing of the Lord, but not directly as if appealing to the Lord. So there's a small difference. And I think the other difference is Moses, frankly, probably was not that expendable. I don't think that's the whole solution. God just chose to do it that way. He could have taken Moses' life. He took Nadab and Abihu, just like that. Actually, the book Strange Fire, which we're about to read as elders, opens with that chapter. And that was a well-written chapter. Whew! Nadab and Abihu, prime of the prime, picked by God. He called them by name. And when they did what was wrong, he went, whew, gone. Wow. So I don't know, Jim, do you have any ideas to help me out beyond what I can guess?
I'm just saying people and some of the terms that you just spoke to, the rabble, that sort of thing, they apparently were not the type of person that would be wanting the Lord anyway.
Okay.
I guess that might have had something to do with it.
Okay.
Probably a church discipline.
Yeah. Yeah, a very early form of... Well, I mean, Paul says that, you know, lest you be judged when you take the Lord's table. You really check your heart. But I think that is a key part. You're right. Moses was a man who was teachable. And he would follow the Lord. There were some, it didn't matter what you did. They just wouldn't. And riffraff mixed people who are dividing stuff. Mark?
But didn't God have to discipline Well, sure.
Initially. But see, he eventually surrendered to God where the people, some of the people didn't, it sounds like.
I think that is the issue, that there was a difference in heart attitude and responsiveness to correction. But that's really a guess because some of the terms, mixed multitude, and what we know from the rest of Moses' life. Moses was a highly teachable man. His challenge was persuading everybody else to listen to what God said, because he wasn't that pushy. But God provided plenty of push. Paul?
And another difference is that Moses was the leader of the people of Word. I mean, they sometimes challenged his leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it looks like Moses is doing the same to God.
Yeah.
But really, God had made Moses the leader. The people were more in a role they were supposed to be submitted instead of complaining.
Yeah. Part of it is the office or the place of leader. Aaron had leadership. God took out Nadab and Abihu, not Aaron. Moses was leader. He dealt with the hard hearts, not with Moses in the same sense. But I think there was even a difference in responsiveness. Some of its responsiveness, some of its place that God promised Aaron, your descendants. You know, I don't have all the answers on that. And I don't know. I think of my sentence carefully here. No, I think it's easy. I don't know why God lets some of us live. And why he lets, why does he let some false prophets speak week after week on TV or in the biggest church in Texas? And others who are faithful, godly men die of a heart attack when they're young or get hit by a car. I can't answer that. So that's on the obedience-disobedience scale. So just to stretch the question, say, it's harder than we think. It is harder than we think. Greg?
I was thinking that I'm not so sure that what Moses did was necessarily and how he did it was necessarily wrong. But Moses would rise to the level of
okay. I'm listening. Oh, it was above his pay grade.
You have to take care of this because I can't do it.
Well, and that was part of what Moses needed to learn, wasn't it?
In the chain of command, if you're overburdened for the task, and you can't satisfy their whining and complaints, so does that mean that you're complaining to your...
Well...
Is that complaining, or is it bringing to their attention what's going on?
I think it's an important point. In this case, I think he did complain, but I think there are times when people just say, "What was the king who brought the letter from the attacker to the Lord and just laid it out?" Hezekiah, right? He just laid it out to the Lord. Lord, you should deal with this because this is what's going to happen unless you do something different. I think that's not complaining. That's a good example. Moses almost said, the Abrahamic covenant was a bad idea. Shouldn't say that, Moses. So I think he was complaining, but he didn't cross as severe a line as he could have by God's grace.
But it's also true, Moses, he had a complaints here. He didn't get to go to the promised land. But at the transfiguration,
yeah, that's exactly right.
Moses is there, so, Moses was a flawed person like we all are, but yet he got to be there with Elijah and Jesus. It's like, wow, that's quite an honor.
It is.
And so, obviously, Moses, yeah, he had his bad moments, but boy, his heart must have been right most of the time.
I think so.
And even then, he was complaining out of zealousness for the people and for God.
In a sense, that's true. God, would you please? And he learned. If you look at it, don't you see, do you remember seeing that Moses' prayer life improved as time went by? He began to appeal to the Lord more effectively and base it on his character and what in his grace and his reputation and those things instead of just how he felt. It changed, I think, as he seasoned in time. 40 years is a long time to season as a leader of several million people. And I believe he did season. Mark's got something to add. Yeah, so Moses' attitude was better than the rabble-rousers, and it grew, I think, in confidence just over time. He learned how to handle his emotional response. And I wanted to sort of springboard or dovetail with what Doug Beck said, where did Moses find grace from God? The Mount of Transfiguration says yes. And here, that's the word he uses. He says, have I not, if I found favor, why did you give me this hard thing to do? And then he says at the end, well, if I find favor, then just take me out of it. No, Moses, I'm going to leave you in it because you found favor. I have placed my favor on you. It doesn't mean Moses was so wonderful the Lord picked him. God picked him. That's favor. A favor is something you don't deserve. And so God showed amazing favor beyond what we expect and what he expected, I believe, through time. Wow. I don't know if we should read all these passages. Maybe I'll summarize them for you because it's already five after. Actually, it won't take long. Can I do that? Just at least run through the New Testament passages. I'm looking for a reader for Ecclesiastes 7:10. Thank you, Susie. Philippians 2:15 and 16. Thank you, Rose. Jim, please. James 5:9. Someone, Job 33:13, Ron. And then Deuteronomy 5:21. Was that your hand, Doc? Deuteronomy 5:21, please. These are scriptures that talk about complaining. And just in case we couldn't find examples, I thought of some examples of what we complain about. And I just sort of feel that I want to speak it. We complain about the temperature. It's too hot, or it's Goldilocks too cold, right? The weather. Man, it sure is bright out here. When is it going to get sunny again? You know, the prices on everything keeps going up. My income went up too. Okay, well, you know, those sort of go together. Exercise sure is hard. I wish I had better health. Things are always breaking. I sure wish we had the old time stuff. The old time stuff breaks, but nobody wants the old time stuff. Okay. How about nothing ever changes and everything keeps changing? We do both sides of all these issues, don't we? And we need to guard our hearts. So Ecclesiastes 7:10, please. I don't think I picked exactly the right verse I wanted. No, I think it's the correct verse, but I didn't get the right reference. There's a reference in Ecclesiastes that says, well, do not say the former times were so much better than the present times. So that's Ecclesiastes, and I'm sorry. I think you read the right verse. My reference is incorrect. Okay. All right. Let's hear it in a second translation. please, Karen.
It says in the ESV, say not, why were the former days better than these? Well, it's not from wisdom that you asked us.
Oh, Why were the former days better than these? It's not from wisdom that you ask that. It's not wise to say, it was always better in the past. It wasn't. It's good you've forgotten the evil things, the hard things. Okay? Philippians 2, 15 to 16. Paul gives us some help. Thank you. You read correctly. I think it's verse 14 that opens that.
It does.
And what does it say?
It says, do all things without grumbling or questioning.
Whew. Steve Green's song. We might get to hear one Sunday morning with Teresa. Steve Green popularized it. Do everything without complaining. Do everything without arguing. And it goes on. Imprinted in my brain. He put scripture to song. Yeah. Wow. That was good for us as kids. James 5, 9.
Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door.
Wow. Do not grumble against one another because the judge for the Lord may be outside your door getting ready to judge. My case. Uh-oh. Years ago, my wife said, please don't tell me negative things about people. Why? You just ruined my image of somebody. I want you to work through the problem, not me. Okay. That was good. Good advice. Good counsel. Really good. Don't grumble against one another. Job 33:13.
Why do you contend with him? For he does not give an accounting of any of his words.
Okay. All right. Who's speaking and who is the one we should not contend with? Help us out, Ron. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's not wise to argue with God. Now, to wrestle until you get a clear understanding is good. But to say, God, you're wrong, that's where the error is. God, you don't know enough, you can't do it, that's where the error is. At least Moses put it in a question form.
Moses wasn't greedy and lusty.
No, he wasn't.
They had something going on in their heart.
He's probably thinking, I can hardly believe that we get manna every day. This is amazing. It's got to be God. Moses didn't do it. Yeah, there was a different attitude. Okay. Deuteronomy 5:21 gives a fundamental principle. Thank you. That, you shall not covet, period, is the way it's written in earlier in Scripture too. Coveting, the 10th commandment, deals with everything between commandments 1 and 10. Do you realize that? Have you seen that before? When we don't love God first, when we covet something, we're saying God isn't good enough to me. God isn't taking care of me, and we're worshiping something except God. So that's the deal. Well, I'll leave the multiple leadership to you all to explore later, but New Testament says a lot about multiple leadership. And you have the passages there. There's always a leader among leaders when you have multiple leadership. It's just the way naturally things are going to happen. Someone will rise so they'll be the leader. But the scriptures have a lot to say about not complaining. So keep these things in mind. When you have your Thanksgiving Day celebration, I would wager, but not money, that something's not going to go quite the way you planned it on Thanksgiving Day. The people will come late, the turkey will be burned, or something won't be cooked all the way, or you'll forget a food dish until you're already saying amen for the food. Somebody will forget to show up. Maybe you forgot to call them even. I hope not, but something will probably not go perfectly. Let's just give thanks anyway. Just give thanks anyway. And be grateful if we have life and breath, if we just have God, that's all we really need. That's really all we need. Thanks for coming. Let's break into some small groups and pray.